all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends across the Civic Media Radio Network at 7:06. Nice to have you here on this Friday morning, August 9th, 2024. Coming up this hour, from the choice of the aw shucks governor from Minnesota to repeated appearances in Wisconsin and political conventions in Chicago and Milwaukee, it is clear the path to political power in the United States runs right through voters in the Midwest. We'll talk about that. We'll ask Mark Jacob if reporters and pundits are asking questions about Donald Trump's fitness for office as enthusiastically as they were about President Joe Biden's, especially after Trump's train wreck of a news conference yesterday. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel has an update on Trump's legal cases. And we talked to Dan Schumacher about the Olympics and the Brewers' magic number, because we can do that now, whether people like it or not.
Yeah.
And we do. Meteorologist Brittany Merlot is here. And Rob says, good morning from Tigerton. It's cloudy and 56. Yesterday turned out to be a very good day. I did 6 mowing jobs in Tigerton. And as the sun came out later in the afternoon, it really felt like fall. I had a Frisco burger for supper. Is that a sandwich with a hamburger over 2 pieces of toasted bread? Look at Rob stirring the pot for National Sandwich Month over here.
So I have one thing to say about this, and it's actually, people love to ask the question, is a hot dog a sandwich? And one of the defenses that it isn't is because, you know, you call it a ham sandwich, or you call it a, you know, whatever sandwich, and you're naming the piece of meat that you're eating.
Yes.
That would make a hamburger not a sandwich. But I think we could all agree that a hamburger is a sandwich. So therefore, why can a hot dog be a sandwich as well? It is encased between 2 pieces of bread. Discuss.
So this is why we asked a scientist to join the show weekday mornings at 7:06. Now, Brittany Merlot insists that her science has only to do with meteorology, but it makes her the smartest person on the show. And true. So we have to ask these tough questions. Brittany, where do you stand on whether the Frisco burger is a sandwich?
Well, I mean, I have to back this way up. I don't even know what a Frisco burger really technically is.
It's a burger between 2 round pieces of sourdough toast.
Okay.
With some Swiss cheese. That's a burger. We don't call it a burger sandwich.
No.
Now, in Iowa, they have something called a loose meat sandwich, which is basically a sloppy Joe. A sloppy Joe without the tomato part that's in it. It's not a hamburger. It's loose ground beef put between pieces of bread.
Okay. All right. Yuck.
It's disgusting. I hate that. I hate the term open face sandwich. It just sounds like a sore.
Well, we did that. Yep, last week with the hot turkey and the hot beef sandwich. So we're answering all these weighty questions, since I don't want to be aware of lasagna anymore. That was July. This is August. Brittany, it is cloudy, cool. It does indeed feel very fall-like out there, but I'm sure we're not done with summer yet.
No. We're definitely going to be warming up by Sunday. So if you're looking for the warmer temperatures, the entire state will be back into the mid to upper 70s. And by next week, much more seasonal. But those that wanted the refreshing cool down, no humidity whatsoever, and a ton of sunshine headed our way all weekend long. But first, we have really thick clouds up in northern Wisconsin right now, kind of coming from Minnesota off of the lake. And that's going to be the case through the afternoon. We'll stay cloudier up north, more and more sunshine to the south today, and highs only climbing to the mid-60s north to low 70s south. That's it. Plus, we've got those winds still whipping out of the northwest, gusting up to 25 to 30 miles per hour. So it's going to be a breezy one and crisp. Of course, the further north you live, the little worse it's going to be. But further south, still quite comfortable and gorgeous. Really no rain in the forecast for you guys.
Very nice. And let's see, Rob is telling us, remember the heat wave last Labor Day weekend last year. That's right. Labor Day weekend was kind of a hot one. So
sure was.
We have to be mindful. We get these ups and downs. Summer's far from done. Brittany, thank you so much. Hope you have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks.
All right. If you'd like to reach the show at some point here, of course, as you figured out already from Rob and from Roger and Alicia and others on Facebook or YouTube, you can put a comment on social media there, or you can call or text the show 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842 from the mailbag. Let's see. Rob also reminds us that John Deere is the best lawnmower on his fleet. Roger was commenting on our earlier remarks about the Donald Trump attempt at a press conference yesterday, and he really seemed to have a problem with Vice President Kamala Harris not receiving any votes in the primaries, although I would remind folks, she's the vice president to Joe Biden. They run as a ticket. Excuse me. And that there has been a thorough vetting process. But as Roger goes on to note, Trump sounded tired, bored. He should have been asked tougher questions. The softball questions he was asked, he never answered. All very true. And Alicia Saunders just simply adds the rambling with a faceplant emoji on there. So again, you can share your comments by text or on social media as well, or 855-75-CIVIC. Now, we talked a bit about it in the last hour. If you ever miss an hour of the show, you can always go back to listen in at civicmedia.us, find stations, find shows, even subscribe as a podcast and listen to the show at your leisure. Go to civicmedia.us to learn more about that. The daily newsletter that we put together at Up North News comes out early every weekday morning. You can sign up at upnorthnewswi.com. In this morning's edition, there is a link to our website story about Kamala Harris's decades-long efforts to reduce gun violence in California and across the country. Christina Laurie writes about what's big at farmers markets these days in early August. And there's a link in there in case you missed our interview last week on the show with a doctor taking part in a national bus ride called Ride to Decide, to help people who want to protect women's reproductive health rights have more of a voice between now and Election Day. And speaking of Election Day, that's coming up on Tuesday. There is a primary in many instances, but there are also two statewide constitutional amendment referendums for you to look at and to determine whether you want to vote yes and let Republican legislators sit on and block more federal money to be distributed around Wisconsin, or vote no and tell them to mind their own damn business. The August 13th primary election information can be found at myvote.wi.gov. The Midwest is, I mean, the place to be, especially right about now. You have the political conventions in Chicago for the Democrats in a week and a half. You just had the Republicans in Milwaukee. You had in the Chippewa Valley earlier this week, you had three out of four on the major party tickets in town at the same time: Kamala Harris, Tim Walz, J.D. Vance. Only Donald Trump continued to sit and stew at home. But they know that Wisconsin voters, and in this case, Western Wisconsin voters, are as important as ever, because add to it a key U.S. Senate race with Tammy Baldwin and Eric Hovde, and a very big congressional race in the 3rd Congressional District, where incumbent Republican Derek Van Orden will take a break from temper tantrums and try to run against whoever emerges from the Democratic primary next Tuesday. There are three Democrats who are running in that primary. I talked to William Garcia, the chair of the 3rd Congressional District Democrats, at the Harris-Walz rally in Eau Claire. And we'll play back remarks later of him saying that he does believe the party will fully unite behind whoever emerges from that primary, whether it's Rebecca Cook, Katrina Shanklin, or Eric Wilson, because there's going to be so much national attention on Western and parts of Central Wisconsin in that 3rd Congressional District. You also have brand new maps for the legislature. Now, the Democrats would have to pick up a lot of seats to gain control of the state assembly, but the odds aren't zero. And as a result, you're going to see some very spirited races in a lot of these assembly districts. It's less likely that Democrats could take the majority in the state Senate. You only have half the state Senate up for re-election at any given time because they have four-year terms instead of two-year terms. But the battle lines have clearly been drawn. This is, as Republican Senator Ron Johnson called it in an AP story about Western Wisconsin, a bellwether district in a bellwether state. This is a district that has been historically drawn to moderates. You had Ron Kind holding the seat as a moderate Democrat for 26 years. Before that, moderate Republican Steve Gunderson held the seat for 16 years. Barack Obama has won the 3rd district. Donald Trump has won the 3rd district. This is just an area that is so very much in play. And part of the edge that Democrats think they have now is the addition of Minnesota Governor Walz because of so much of Western Wisconsin being in the Twin Cities TV market. There is already a familiarity with Governor Walz and all of the things that a Democratic-controlled legislature has done in Minnesota when it comes to making school lunches free and increasing school funding and enshrining and the protection of abortion rights and a real middle-class tax cut. All of these things and more are being seen by voters in Western Wisconsin who see the better economic numbers from Minnesota as well and think that, you know, again, they can make the big difference here in Western Wisconsin on November 5th. Meanwhile, as we mentioned, Donald Trump had his attempt at a news conference yesterday. When asked why he hasn't been out holding rallies, he's only having one this week, and it's in Montana. That's a fair question. Where's he been? And his response to that was, what a stupid question. And then he went on to not really answer it. He, again, just wanted to compare his crowd size on January 6th to that of Martin Luther King. He had the same nicknames about Crazy Nancy. He claims that he won the documents case about the classified documents that he stole and then withheld at Mar-a-Lago. No, the case has been delayed. He certainly hasn't won it. And would he abide by the results? His answer was, I hope we have an honest election. I'm just not hearing anything about you, the voter. It's all about him and his claims about dark times ahead and not what he can actually get done for typical American voters. It's a worn out act. We're going to talk to Jim Santel about some of Trump's legal woes in just a bit. This is real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll talk more sports with Dan Schumacher in about a half hour here, but the Milwaukee Brewers swept a three-game series in Atlanta, winning big again yesterday, 16-7. 16 runs on 20 hits, including 6 home runs. They're back at home now to start the longest homestand of the year, starting with 3 this weekend against the Cincinnati Reds. First pitch at 7:10, pregame at 6:35 on Civic Media stations in Richland Center, Racine, Kenosha, Park Falls, and Oshkosh as well. Jim Santel is here, former U.S. attorney, to talk to us about legal matters and preview his show, Amicus, that you can hear every Saturday morning across the Civic Media Radio Network, Amicus, a Law Review. Mr. Santel, how are you?
Pat, delighted to be with you once again to talk about all things breakfast sandwich related.
Oh, good, because this is National Sandwich Month, and well, we're nothing if not willing to beat a subject to death here on this program, whether it's lasagna last month or sandwiches this month. Jim, I have to ask, can there be legal matters involving breakfast sandwiches? Because I'm sure you have a legal case for everything.
Absolutely. We can always find a topic to fit into the agenda for the day. And indeed, I don't know the resolution of this, but yes, indeed, there is a company called Vega Delphia that has sued Dunkin' Brands and something called Beyond Meat. Yes, it's in the federal court in Orlando, a federal case. They're alleging that Dunkin' ripped off a slogan, great taste, plant-based, in advertising and promoting their own vegan breakfast sandwich. I know your listeners are on the edge of their seats waiting for the disposition of that case. This is what we do in federal court.
I can't believe they didn't trademark Vegadelphia. I mean, right. if you're gonna do vegan stuff there, and yeah, great taste, plant-based. Doesn't strike me as something. You know what? This actually comes back to a good point here about trademarking things. There is, and the name escapes me now, but I was reading that there was a very popular podcast. I think it was mostly about relationship issues, but she never trademarked the name, and somebody else had, whose podcast, you know, is just a fraction of hers, but they have the trademark. And so she was forced to change the name, and her audience took a dive for a while, you know, because she wasn't able to get out there and quickly promote the new name. Trademark and patents and things like that, I mean, it doesn't matter how small your idea is, it's really within anybody's best interest to try to get some legal protection around it early, isn't it?
Absolutely. The Patent and Trademark Office in Virginia there, right across the river from Washington, D.C., very serious about these things. And again, to continue the sort of silly commentary from me this morning, just this past term, the United States Supreme Court wrestled with the trademark of the phrase Trump too small that was being advocated by a California attorney who wanted to describe what he said were Trump's policies. In fact, it had to do with this exchange way back in 2016.
Yes. About his small hands. Yeah, yes, right, exactly. Right. But in every one of these cases, again, the law is there to protect you, but only if you use the law. If you get something registered, it's, you know, that's what it's there for.
Very serious stuff.
Yep. Absolutely. All right. Let's get to the serious stuff involving Donald Trump. And let's again clarify the one thing that he said in his press conference yesterday, where he said, I won the documents case at Mar-a-Lago. James, you are a former U.S. attorney. I believe you understand the law well enough to tell us that might not have been true.
It's line number 576,854 just in this past month. The answer, you got it just right, Pat. Of course, he did not win anything. The district court dismissed the case on a frivolous and unsupportable ground that the prosecutor did not have authority to do this. It's up at the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. Strong prediction they're going to overturn that, send it back down for a trial at some point in the future. There's been no victory here. There's been no win here at all. This is just further litigation suspended while it's on appeal. But frankly, Donald Trump, simply wrong, simply inaccurate. Another misstatement to the American public about what his legal status is.
So the one legal status we know is that he is a convicted felon, and that this has to do with the business fraud hush money case, and that the sentencing date isn't that terribly far away. But there are other, I don't know if you want to call them stall tactics or just other reasons why the case would be delayed. So where do you think things stand right now in terms of Donald Trump being sentenced on those 34 felony convictions?
Right. So this is Judge Juan Merchan, and talk about news. We're reporting on this terrific show just as it's breaking. Late last night, the government, the Jack Smith's office, asked the judge for a delay in the deadline for submission of documents in anticipation of the sentencing. So Judge Merchan has scheduled and is keeping on his calendar September 18th, September 18th for the sentencing date in all of this. Actually the matters related to that, of course, he is wrestling with all this. He has, as a result of all this, kind of postponed his own decision until September 16th on whether what he's going to do with the immunity decision. There's another request to recuse. My prediction as to all of this is that on September 16th, Juan Merchan will have a hearing and he's going to announce he's not recusing himself. There's nothing to be seen here with respect to immunity. And 2 days later, we'll reaffirm his plan to sentence Donald Trump. So on that case, not a whole lot of surprise. The one in Washington, D.C. is the one that really did cause a lot of hubbub just recently here. And that too is the subject of a delay in some proceedings coming out of Jack Smith.
But even if there is a sentence handed down on September 18th, that does not mean that Trump will begin serving any kind of a sentence that's handed down. There's going to be an appeal process from there, correct?
Absolutely. So what will happen, regardless of whether he is put on probation, whether there's a little bit of time of incarceration, whatever that sentence will be, almost certainly Judge Merchan, again, the state court judge, will stay that order, will say, you know what, I'll let you appeal this. And Donald Trump will appeal it to the appeals court there in New York. it may be months, if not candidly years, before that sentence is actually executed, assuming the appeals court affirms all the things that happened below. So a long history on that one, again, even as the D.C. case plods along as well.
And finally, on the matter of fake electors, which we had in Wisconsin, but also in several other states, in Arizona, we had recently the first conviction of somebody associated with the fake electors case. You've noted that in Colorado, a grand jury wanted to indict Trump in the fake electors case, but didn't, based on a prosecutor request. It seems like there's not going to be any one singular resolution of fake electors. It's going to happen on a state-by-state basis.
Right. I think that's exactly right. We've got all of these different approaches, and that's part of our system. We shouldn't necessarily bemoan that. But you've got state prosecutors, obviously, some of whom have addressed this fake electors issue. Others who have not here in Wisconsin, as you know, our attorney general has charged the architects of the scheme, but not the fake electors themselves. That differentiates the case here from those other states. You've also got the fake electors arguably charged in the federal case as well by Jack Smith. They're figuring out right now with Tanya Chutkan what that's all about. And you will get different dispositions with respect to them. Nothing inconsistent with that. Doesn't just because one goes ahead, the other one is delayed or gets a different disposition. Nothing wrong with that. Judges can, in fact, take note of what's going on in their jurisdiction and when they're imposing a sentence or figuring out how to resolve a case. But you can have state dispositions, federal dispositions, and it just further, if you will, complicates the overall resolution of the attempt to overthrow, undermine the 2020 election.
Well, thank goodness we've got somebody who's able to track all this, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. Amicus Law Review, his program can be heard Saturday mornings, 9 to 11, across the Civic Media Radio Network. Jim, thank you. Have a great weekend.
Pat, always great to be with you. See you next week as well. Take care.
All right. Mark Jacob will join us in just a moment here. You're up north. I took a little rest. Back on track on a Yacht Rock Friday. It's August 9th. 50 years ago today, Richard Nixon resigned the presidency in what was most definitely a different era in American politics from what we have now. Just witnessed the press conference that former President Donald Trump attempted to hold yesterday. And imagine that happening in any period prior to, you know, sometime in 2015. It just staggers the imagination to imagine a press conference that looks like that. And again, you don't have to go back and look at the video. Go look for a transcript. Read the transcript. Read these quotes. And then let's talk a bit more about whether the national media is paying as much attention to Trump's mental acuity as they were to President Joe Biden's. Somebody who agrees with me is certainly here. Mark Jacob and I talk every Friday at this time about how the media is and is not covering some of the big stories and the way that they cover them. His Stop the Presses newsletter is available at stopthepresses.news. Mark Jacob, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. How are you doing?
I am doing all right. And I guess maybe folks listening to this are going, well, what's really different other than, you know, Biden leaving the ticket and now Trump, you know, the focus goes on his age. And it's not like we haven't heard Trump for all of these years. But I guess, Mark, there's supposed to be something different about a news conference or a press conference, whatever you want to call it. Something different in that, you know, somebody asks a question and you answer the question. And instead, I mean, Trump's never been good at it anyway, but this really was just, I'm going to take all of my 90-minute rambling remarks at rallies and I'm going to pause long enough for a reporter to ask something, and then I'm just going to pick up where I left off on the rambling. It was not really a press conference in that sense of the word because of Trump, not because of the reporters necessarily.
Yeah, well, it was also in his home ballpark, and I don't know if you noticed, but they didn't mic the questioners.
Right.
You know? So Trump, you didn't hear the questions; you just heard Trump's answers. And there was less opportunity for follow-ups because the reporters didn't have a microphone. So it was totally, you know, he was totally kind of putting his thumb on the scale for it. But it was just him rambling. And Pat, the thing that bothers me is this guy's running for president in an election that's coming up in 3 months. And so when he lies, the attitude that, well, it's not news, Trump always lies. It is news that Trump always lies. It's got to be news that Trump always lies, because that's the job of the news media. They're supposed to be in the truth business. And if they're in the truth business and they're just saying, oh, well, it's Trump, he just always lies, then you've just abandoned your mission. And it's just very frustrating. I mean, you know, you had some news outlets, you know, said rambling discourse or I mean, I wanted them in the headlines to say that he did a press conference filled with lies, because it was. He keeps on repeating, for example, the post-birth abortion lie, which is not a thing, but he keeps on saying it. And I would like to hear the press, just when he says that, in unison say, that's not true, or that's a lie. I mean, push back at him. I mean, it's ridiculous that he's allowed to say that over and over again, and as if it's true. And it sinks in with some people. I'm worried about that.
Yes, well, it sinks into a number of people, unfortunately. And so he just says these things, they go unchallenged. And then, you know, the media, I'll put it all in one lump, even though there's different reporters in different places. But now the ones who are following Vice President Kamala Harris on the campaign trail, you know, as in, I noticed in one post that you shared, the reporter questions asked of Vice President Harris yesterday afternoon was, respond to Trump's press conference, respond to Trump accepting the debate, opine on why he pulled out of the debate, respond to Trump's criticisms of you, respond to Trump's criticisms of walls, and when will you take more press questions? Right. Rather than however many months it had been since Donald Trump had a press conference. These folks are broken.
Yeah, that's just awful. And they're going to keep on complaining that they don't get enough access to her. But when they get access to her, they ask stupid questions and that are not policy oriented. I mean, that's part of I've written about this in the Stop the Press's newsletter, how they're just consumed with the need to be entertaining, you know, and so, oh, there's a big contest here. We have to see who's going to win the contest. No, I mean, someone's running for president. Ask them what they think about health care. Ask them how they're going to restore abortion rights. So ask them, you know, ask them a lot of different questions. Ask them about energy independence. I mean, there are actually things that matter to us as people. And instead, it's just, oh, who's leading? Who's not leading? It's all just this shallow horse race. And it's just so distressing, Pat. Here we are. We've been in this Trump era of just constant lies for 9 years now. 9 years. And you're still getting the same old crap. And you're still getting the same old treatment of it.
Well, because so many people either treat it as a sport or that it's purely about marketing. And as you and Stephen Beschloss have noted, they use this term, the far left, right, or the crazy far left, right, when they're talking about things like, you know, reproductive health rights and gun safety matters, when in fact those aren't far left, that they are as mainstream and frankly bipartisan as positions can come in many instances.
Yeah, here we are in this, like, you know, a divided country, we keep on hearing, but there are certain issues that almost everyone agrees with. I mean, people agree that that kids should eat lunch, you know, in school, that, you know, kids who need lunch should get it. They 2/3 of people believe in abortion rights, 2/3 of people. And when you talk about gun safety stuff, you know, it's pushing almost 90% of people who think that we should have gun background checks. But yet the news media, by and large, has characterized those as liberal agenda items. And, you know, when you get Fox News saying, oh, it's Fox News, they're, I mean, saying that Harris and Walls are far left agenda, or even, you know, Trump called them communist, you know, which I don't quite get. I don't think that even works anymore. I mean, I hope it doesn't work anymore. I mean, I could see in the 60s, you know, you had the Cold War going on and all that other stuff, but nobody, No, the Democrats are not communists, and just saying it just kind of undercuts your argument. And,
right.
But let's just recognize what middle of the road values are, and what, as people, as Americans, We can all, we don't like dictators. You know, most people don't like dictators. Unfortunately, Trump and the Republican Party do. But that's a minority opinion on their part. Most people think that Vladimir Putin is a terrible person, and they think Ukraine should be defended. So that's not, that's also, that's not a far left agenda item. That's a decency item from people who actually care about democracy, not only here but around the globe. And so let's recognize that those are normal issues and normal positions that people have, and laugh off this far left agenda stuff, because that's not what's going on right now.
So rather than really the press calling a lie, as they should but don't, they have instead focused on a different aspect. The headline in the New York Times is Trump tries to wrestle back attention at Mar-a-Lago news conference, and they make it about the attention that Trump wants the attention, and then of course they give it to him. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, rather than going on about the rambling incoherence and the flight of ideas and the stream of consciousness, and again, all of the lies. But it leads me to ask this question in terms of seeking attention. Not just the lying, but, you know, going for really big lies, trying to be shocking, with J.D. Vance attempting to swift boat Tim Walz, would be the example that I want to use here, where they know these things aren't true when they say them. But if you lob these kinds of accusations, now we're no longer hearing as much about big crowds as much as questions are being raised about Tim Walz's military record, rather than addressing the question right away.
Right. Well, there was a headline, I don't know if it was New York Times, Washington Post, but one of those two had a headline that talked about Walz's his military record coming under scrutiny. And it's this kind of passive construction in which, well, you know, we're all looking at something, but it doesn't explain why we're looking at it. We're looking at it because the Republicans have decided to use their old tactics, such as the swift boat thing. And so the media, when they do that, there's this passive construction. It lets the bad actors get away with it. It wipes away their fingerprints, and they can just carefully step away from the controversy and pretend that it's a real controversy.
Right.
And then, of course, they'll cite the news media saying, well, American people are very concerned about this, you know. So it becomes this kind of something that's constructed out of whole cloth, but suddenly, you know, everyone points to as if it's a real thing.
I love that tactic of people are asking or people are saying. That's exactly what Trump did with the National Association of Black Journalists Conference, when, you know, he wasn't the one that was questioning Kamala Harris's, you know, racial identity. He says, well, people are asking. And I don't know how you can get enough people to say, when you hear that, understand it's he's saying that's a BS argument.
Right. What gets me about the swift boat thing is I hope people can recognize that the Republican Party just really has no policies to make your life better. I mean, I'm not saying that like, oh, good. I'm saying it's bad. I'm saying I wish that the Republican Party would get serious about stuff that actually matters to people and would engage in a good, vigorous debate and argument about what's the best way to get that done. Instead, it's like they're pulling out something from the John Kerry campaign, the swift boat thing, and they're pulling up birtherism and crap like that. So it's all this kind of greatest hits of ways that the Republican Party has cheap-shotted people in the past.
And not just any people of color, and, you know, people who are women, you know, anybody not like them. Let's try to try to put a critical eye looking the other way. Is there a point at which we would be sitting here saying, okay, it was one thing to cover a positive rollout by the Democrats, but now we're just getting into fawning? Now, I don't think that's a danger, given what you just said about we're scrutinizing Tim Walz's military record. But do you feel like any of the coverage this week rose to the level of fawning, or was it fair coverage of a rollout that so far has been smooth?
Well, I mean, I'm all for asking really hard questions of Democrats, you know, and like when Cuomo in New York got hounded out of office, I thought that was a good thing. I thought that was the press being aggressive and chasing him out. Same thing with Menendez in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Ought to be, you know, that should. So I'm a bipartisan media aggressiveness kind of advocate. But the truth is that I think that the Harris campaign has been virtually flawless. I mean, it's been pretty darn brilliant. And it's been brilliant because it's picked up the tone of the country and what the thirst of the country is. And the thirst of the country is for positivity, for finding ways to look at the future and make things better. That's what I'm saying. This golden oldies stuff with swift voting and these disgusting racial attacks, I think most people are just sick of that kind of crap. I think they want future-looking politicians. And I really think that the press has been pretty even-handed. There just hasn't been anything that you could really jump on much to really criticize Harris. Now, that'll change probably. I mean, you know, and I really expect, because the news media is so thirsty for the narrative of competitiveness and the horse race, I think that they'll, you know, desperately find things to criticize.
Oh, there's no doubt there. I mean, they've tried everything, you know, Doug Emhoff's, you know, first marriage. That attempt went nowhere when his ex-wife came out and said he's a good person and Kamala Harris is a good person. They were really hoping for the scorned first wife to step out. And it doesn't work that way when you're trying to smear good people. It's not to say that there won't be, you know, these rough spots here and there. But so far, again, like you said, the looking backward, you know, moldy oldies versus the looking ahead seems to be something that's working so far for the Democrats, and the voters seem to like it. But we'll continue to follow the coverage here. Mark Jacob, author of the Stop the Presses newsletter. You can get that at stopthepresses.news, and he does a lot for us here at Courier Newsroom at couriernewsroom.com. Mark, thanks so much. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
See ya.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk a little sports here with Dan Schumacher, not just the Olympics winding down. The Packers have their first preseason game coming up tomorrow afternoon. You won't find it on some of the usual TV stations, so we'll tell you about that. And believe it or not, we can start talking about a magic number for the Brewers. Don't yell at me. I didn't come up with this first. Somebody else did. We'll talk about that and more. Dan Schumacher next. You're up north. What we got going on here, guys? It's Friday morning at 7:51, and this is where Dan Schumacher and Greg Bach teach me a little something about the Grateful Dead. Where are we going?
Dan, what do you got?
Greg, I'm going to let you answer this one.
This is Dire Wolf off of probably maybe my favorite Dead record because of the country feel, but Working Man's Dead. But just
Working Man's Dead, it's exactly right.
Reminds me of the Birds and Flying Burrito Brothers.
You know, they had to make that album to make up for the money that they lost on the original album through Capitol Records. And so they came in with that one, which became a hit. And it saved their butt, you know, with the contract for the record company.
It's good stuff.
So,
it is good stuff.
A little breaking news from the world of sports. Golfer Chichi Rodriguez has died at the age of 88. That is a sad thing. But his retirement from competitive golf was a relief to broadcasters everywhere because Les Nessman of WKRP ruined Chichi Rodriguez for all of us. I don't know if Dan's or if Greg's going to find the WKRP clip, but Chai Rodriguez, which is simply a reminder of in broadcasting, you're always learning.
Yes.
Let's give a look. You got it there?
And Greg just told us that I didn't know that the White Sox manager.
Winner of this week's Gulf Coast Golf Classic was Chai Chai Rodriguez.
Rest in peace, Chi Chi.
Are we easily amused or what?
First Puerto Rican to be inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame, passing away yesterday at the age of 88. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel bringing up magic numbers. The Brewers' magic number is 41. So 41. We got that going for us.
That's a long ways, man.
I know. It's way too early for that. But, yeah, apparently it was really a slow day.
It must have been a slow news day.
It was slow. Well, when you sweep Atlanta and when you're winning by these lopsided, you know, football scores, you know, 16-7 yesterday. I mean, look at that. 16 runs on 20 hits. 6 home runs. Jackson Churio hit 2 two-run homers. just like one of his teammates did the day before. So at the age of 20 years, 6 months, he becomes the youngest brewer with a multi-home run game since Billy Joe Robideau in 1985. So the Brewers are giving you reasons to talk about magic numbers. Whereas when we talk to you on Fridays and Christina Laurie on Tuesdays, never a time goes by where Christina doesn't, have a woeful attitude about her beloved Chicago White Sox.
Yeah. Yeah. The White Sox are the worst organization in professional sports right now, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the worst. And you know what? Jerry Reinsdorf and his crew, they're, I don't understand how they're not recognizing it, but they must have because they fired their coach on Thursday. They must start to, lights starting to come on up top. So
maybe.
I see bring back Ozzie Guillen. I thought, he was a guy that shouldn't, he was bread and butter. Won a World Series for him as manager. I don't, he's in the broadcast booth now, but
manager, broadcaster. No, put him back on the field. He can't be any worse.
I know. That's true. That's true.
Let's just try that. The Brewers, meanwhile, start their longest homestand of the year. 10 days, 10 games, and starting with 3 this weekend against Cincinnati. Then the LA Dodgers come to town for 4, and then 3 against Cleveland next weekend. The opener against Cincinnati is at 7:10 this evening, pregame at 6:35. On Civic Media stations in Richland Center, Racine, Oshkosh, and Park Falls. Packers against Cleveland. First preseason game is tomorrow afternoon, 1 o'clock, on Civic Media stations, WRCO in Richland Center, WCQM in Park Falls, WRJN in Racine, Kenosha. And if you want to watch it on TV, you're going to have to look around because of the Olympics. The stations in Milwaukee and Green Bay have pushed the Packers preseason game tomorrow afternoon to other channels. So a look. Yeah. Did you watched Rice Lake's Kenny Bednarik in the 200 meter at the Olympics yesterday?
I didn't watch it live. I watched the replay, but congratulations to him. I watched him play high school football against my son. He was a talent then. He's a talent now. I hope Rice Lake takes a lot of pride in what they produced there on the national scene.
Oh my goodness, yes. Yes.
Silver medalists, two silver medals. He kudos to him. That's awesome.
Yeah. I told the story in the last hour how we were sitting at one of our favorite little taverns last night and we were talking about Kenny Bednarik and remember that the group at the other end of the bar was like, no, don't tell us. Because we knew I'd watched it live in the afternoon. And they're like, they didn't want to know. They wanted to see the race live, which is always a problem with the
time zones. That's been happening a lot everywhere I go. They don't want to know the results because they want to
watch. They just don't want to talk to us. I think I'm starting to think it's personal.
That was a volleyball game. I think we were talking about that one.
The women's volleyball team, they're going for the gold medal now. They will play for the gold medal at 6 a.m. on Sunday. The men's basketball team will play for the gold at 4 a.m. tomorrow Central Time. They had to come back from a double-digit deficit to beat Serbia. Basically, LeBron and Curry put the rest of the team on their back. It's not must-watch TV for me. I happened to turn on the TV in the final minute of the game or so, and it was kind of exciting, but once you've done the dream team the one time, the rest is kind of anticlimactic, I think.
Right. You expect them to win. I mean, how don't you have the greatest players in the world, both on the men and the women's side?
Well, but, they're going to go up against France, which is really quite the rising powerhouse here for basketball, between Wembanyama and some of the other, top draft picks that they've had.
Pat, I got to interrupt you a little bit just because it's the 9th. Today is 8-9 of 2024, so 29 years ago was the day that Jerry Garcia passed away.
That's right.
Oh, wow. Today is
the last day of what they call Days Between. Oh. And it's a song that he wrote about a year before he died about what you do with your life between the anniversary of your birth and the anniversary of your death. And his was August 1st, his birthday, and his death was August 9th. So this is the end of the Days Between week. And that's why I have that party, Pat.
It's actually a birthday party for him, but it was nice of him to bring the Grateful Dead into this as well. And it's going to be a great time. I mean, you've been talking about this you talk about it basically for 364 days. And so we're looking forward to the festivities tomorrow night. Always great when some of your Chicago friends come up and think it's going to be a great time. So you have a great day and then we'll see you for the festivities tomorrow. Yes.
Make sure that tie-dye's on, Pat. I want to see a tie-dye on you.
I know I've got one someplace.
You got to. I do.
I'll come up with it. All right. Thank you, buddy. Talk to you later.
See you, Dan.
Bye-bye.
Greg will be back for Matt and Air on Air 2 short hours from now, and then be at the Laughing Tap. Have a great weekend.
You as well, sir.
Then coming up next week, we will have Hans Breitenmoser along. We will be talking about tariffs 101. You hear about tariffs and Trump and trade wars with China. What exactly does that mean to Wisconsin farmers and our economy? That's one of many great guests that we'll have next week. Have a wonderful weekend. Remember that Up North News is the Wisconsin outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. See you Monday.